So without further ado, I want to go ahead and give you Warren Chisholm, who's our next speaker.
Hi. Well, the time always arrives. Here I am, stark naked. It's a real privilege, however, to be here. As nervous as I am and as many butterflies as I have, I feel honored in being able to speak with you tonight and in being invited to Blackstone. I had heard of Blackstone and its accomplishments long before I ever received a call to come here. That's why I feel so privileged. I think it's an opportunity. I am deeply impressed. This is the second time this year that I have had the privilege of being at a spiritual retreat of this kind. The first was in Camp Monroe in May of this year. And I left there pretty much impressed, principally with the dedication of the people in AA in this part of the country, and of their very deep gratitude for the opportunity that they found in this great program of AA. I felt that they had something that a great many of us have taken for granted for a long while. And in coming back to Blackstone yesterday and today, I have become again impressed with the same things that I found in Camp Monroe, of the dedication of the people and of their deep gratitude for AA. I think it's a beautiful thing. I think what you've established here is a beautiful thing. We're not used to it in my part of the country. It gives one an opportunity in this three-day period to meditate, to reevaluate our ideals and principles, to take that inventory, and to rededicate ourselves and our lives to the principles for which this great program stands. I'm privileged to be here. If I can get off the ground, I'll be all right. I'll warm up to the subject. It's a subject about which I am very fond. I feel that I know something about it, having been associated with the program for a good many years. It's the most unbelievable thing I have ever known. It must be good. It must be good to keep me interested in and active for as many years as I've been, because I'm the type of individual that if I'm not interested, I go on to other things. And this great program, from the very day that I made my first contact, I knew instinctively that this was it. That this was the thing that I had needed all my life, and that somehow or other, this was the thing that was going to do the job for me that I had needed done all my life. Because of the fact, and I'm not going to regale you with a great deal of drunkology, because my story is all mixed in together. I can't remember the details time by time and so forth and so on. And I don't tell an interesting drunken story anyway. My life has been one of grief and misery and heartache and sorrow and mental torture throughout my drinking experience. I never have been able to look back, like a great many people, and remember the first bit of fun that I ever had with drinking. Oh, I've boasted about the good times I've had, and I've told people about the great time I had last night and couldn't even remember what it was all about. But honestly, looking back, I can't remember anything but the grief and the heartache that I knew for so many years. And I can't remember anything but the grief and heartache and sorrow and insecurity that I inflicted upon those closely associated with me, particularly my wife and my family. I was an alcoholic from the very first drink that I ever took. And I want you to remember, Robbie said tonight, I'm a Bostonian originally. I want you to just remember that I'm one of the improper ones. As I understand alcoholism, and I've never made a great study of it, and I think sometimes we confuse ourselves. You know, this is a simple program. This is an understandable program, and it had to be simple and understandable for a guy like me. Because when I came in it, it had to be down to earth, and it had to be in the language that I understood, because I didn't understand too much in those days. And I think we sometimes confuse ourselves by trying to analyze and psychoanalyze ourselves and our lives, and trying to wonder when we pass from the stage of social drinking into the stage of problem drinking, and why, and wherefore, and what have you, as to how and when and why we became alcoholics. We wonder whether it's a disease or whether it's hereditary. And I like to say that probably somebody dropped me on my head when I was a baby. That's probably why I was an alcoholic. But I think we can simplify this thing in our own minds so easily by just quitting worrying about whether it is a disease or whether it's hereditary or what it is. And by recognizing the fact that when we arrive here, that we are alcoholics in every sense of the word. What good does it do to go back into the past and wonder what brought us here? We're here, and then it becomes our obligation and our duty, if we want this great program to work for us, to accept right now the fact that we are alcoholics, and to recognize that here in this great program is a God-given opportunity to do something about that problem, and ask ourselves the question, what are we going to do about it? You know, we ought to quit being experts in trying to analyze and psychoanalyze and be marriage counselors and employment agencies and finance agencies and what have you, and to recognize the fact that we have the biggest job in the world to do, and that's a job that's going to be with us until the day that we die. That the past must be wiped out completely, except to use it to profit by the mistakes that we made, and to take each new day as it comes, and to apply the principles of this program to our daily lives, and to do the very best job that we know how, to guarantee ourselves that we'll be sober today, the most important job that we have to do every single day that we live. My alcoholism progressed very rapidly. By the time I was 24 or 25 years of age, I was as confirmed an alcoholic as I ever was at any time in my life. And I'm going to dispute the good doctor's claim that he was the worst that ever came into this program. I am sure you will agree with me after I'm through tonight that I was the worst. It's not a great honor, but I'm sure I was. In the meanwhile, I had fallen into a very fine position in industry. One of great promise, one of prestige, one that allowed me to be the big shot that I wanted to be. And you can imagine me, arrogant, egotistical to the core. I knew the answers to everything. Nobody could tell me anything. You run your life, I'll run mine, was my attitude. The kind of individual who went through life doing every single thing he wanted to do, when and how he wanted to do it, without regard or consideration for anyone else. And you can imagine, given that type of individual, a job of authority with promise, the opportunity to walk over everybody and through everybody, that's the greatest thing that can ever happen to the alcoholic. And I held on to that one for a period of approximately 10 years, through luck. being warned constantly in the last 5 years, being told that we can't tolerate this thing, we're going to have to do something about it. But I knew that they couldn't do anything about it and survive, because how could that company ever exist without the services of the great Chisholm? It wasn't possible. And incidentally, I might just add as an aside, they're doing wonderful. And this is many years ago. And finally, the end came one day. But that didn't bother me. I had some semblance of youth at that time. I wish I had it today. And I knew that a man of my great ability wouldn't have any problem getting a job when people found out that I was available. But the trouble was, they didn't find out. That was the trouble. Either that or I know what happened, as I found out so many years later, that my reputation had preceded me, that everybody knew me then as a youth, practically. Everybody knew me then for the undependable, unreliable alcoholic that I was. And in order to catch on, me, the big shot, who spent money faster than he ever made it, buy the house a drink. Maybe you wouldn't have anything at home, but be sure you left an impression behind you. Be sure that everybody said, boy, that Chisholm is a great guy. Isn't he a spender? What a big shot. Boy, I'd like to be like him. Or that's what you thought the impression was that you left behind. How disillusioned can one become? And then, in order to get a job, I went into the business gutter. Because in order to exist, I had to take a day laborer's job then. Me, with all my great ability, but that didn't teach me anything. And then through the good graces of a member of my family, I got who wanted to see his sister-in-law eat regularly, I got another job with a splendid opportunity. Always lucky. Always being presented opportunities. Always being shielded by something. Always getting away with things, drunken driving, smashed up automobiles by the score, always in trouble with the law, should have been in the penitentiary years ago, always in a jam of one kind or another, but through the good graces of family and friends and influence, always being able to walk away scot-free. And each and every single time that I did, it made me just a little bit bolder. It made me just a little bit more arrogant. It made me just a little bit more egotistical, if that were possible. And there was the pattern of my life. In trouble, insecurity, my wife mad with me, my family mad with me, my boss mad with me most of the time. But going along somehow or other, staying lucky, and finally realizing, long before I ever heard of AA, that life was passing me by. I was an ambitious individual. I wanted to be somebody and to accomplish something. But I knew I wasn't getting anywhere, because just about the time I get myself built up to the point of where I was ready for something, I'd go on a drunken zingo. I'd tear down overnight every single thing that I'd built up. And I realized that something was wrong with my drinking pattern. But I was helpless to do anything about it. I had tried many times to taper down my drinking. I realized that every time I drank, I was in trouble, but I was helplessly hooked. I didn't know how to help myself. And the opportunity was presented to me to go to Cleveland. And this was a beautiful chance for the alcoholic. Here was a chance to take a geographic cure. Here was a chance to leave all my problems and troubles and reputation and debts and everything else behind me and go to another city 600 or 700 miles away and start life all over again. Here was the golden opportunity that I needed. Here was my chance to start again with a clean slate. And we discussed it, my wife and I, and I was firmly convinced that this was going to be it. But I forgot the most important thing that I should have known, that nothing was going to change. Because in that move, I had to bring a drunk with me, a drunk by the name of Chisholm. I had to bring me along. And when the alcoholic has to bring himself, nothing changes but the scenery. But through some good fortune again, I was able to build myself up and won an advancement in business in charge of a number of people, a number of outlets. But again, that old arrogance and egotism. You can't keep a good man down. Ability will always out, like murder, so I told myself. And then, of course, you know, you can imagine what happened here. I had showed them. I had really showed those people who wanted to hold me down because they said I drank too much. I had really showed them that with the right opportunity, I could make something of myself. And the first thing you know, I was back drinking worse than ever before. And this position that I had was again in jeopardy. And there I was, being counseled and advised by experts and friends and employers, but not wanting to hear anything from anybody, knowing, as I said, all the answers to everything. My wife heartbroken, my family ashamed, everything in the world was against me. Drinking constantly because of the fact that I couldn't stand what that little thing in there was calling me every single time that I turned around. And you know, once we get into this program, we find out that it's important to follow the principles and practices that we hope to attain and maintain our sobriety every single day that we live. We find it's necessary to adhere to those principles because if there's one thing that'll drive a nalky back to the bottle again quicker than anything else, is trying to do the things that he or she did before they were privileged to become a part of this program. Cheating and chiseling and conniving and all the things that we were guilty of that makes that little thing act up and tell us what a louse we are. And when that acts up and keeps gnawing away at us, when we look in the mirror in the morning and hate ourselves and something keeps talking back to us, there's only one way we can go to get away from it. And that's right back into the neck of that bottle. That's why it's important to become a part of this great program. And what is more important, to have its principles, its ideals, and philosophy become a permanent part of us. Because it's the thing that keeps us honest with ourselves and keeps us straight and keeps us with some semblance of a clear conscience so that we won't find it necessary to run away from anything that life has to offer. And then, here I am, being constantly warned again, but again the big shot. How could they exist without me? I had become an expert in this business also. So, and I knew they couldn't exist. And I remember well the last drunk that I went on. My memory about anything over 15 minutes is very limited. But there are some important things I remember in my life and some important dates. And I remember well this last drunk, and it happened in the year 1937, in late June and early July. I was the type of drunk who never mixed business with drinking. I made a profession of it. You either did one thing or the other. I was a good worker and a good drinker, too. And I couldn't mix the both of them. I couldn't be a professional at both of them. And when I took on one, I left off the other. And when this one was over in about 10 days or 2 weeks, I was the type of drunk also who had to lay in bed 3 or 4 days, kicking it out, listening to those little things down at the foot of the bed talking to me and hearing voices and what have you. All those things are so hard to describe. Talking back to myself, answering them back, and so forth and so on. Talking to myself and answering myself back. And that's, they say, is when you're in pretty bad shape. And there I was. And in getting sober after this 2-week period and getting straightened around a little bit, I, of course, had to go back to work, being the type of fellow that I was, spending money faster than I ever earned it. We had nothing. And I got into the boss's office, and, of course, I'd been there many times before. This was no strange place to me. And I sat on the other side of the desk, and I knew all the marks. I knew every mark that was on that side of the desk facing me. And I knew everything that he was going to say. And one of the finest, most charitable men I've ever known, a 6'4" or 6'5" Texan, about 300 pounds, a brilliant man, and with a heart as big as his carcass. And he talked to me like a Dutch uncle and a father and explaining things to me and told me that he wanted me to be a part of that organization because he felt that I could contribute to it. But certainly on the basis that I was going, I couldn't be. That I was a bad example, not only for my immediate part of the organization, but for the whole company as well. As a matter of fact, he said, they're beginning to wonder what you have on me. And how many times after that I went through that same thing myself, and I get paid back in my own coin many, many times. I never knew until I straightened out and then was in a position to employ people. I never knew what a headache a drunk was. Never. And believe me, he had all the... Why they ever tolerated me throughout the years, I will never know. And he talked to me and told me it couldn't go on and so forth, and I agreed with him. I'd agree with anything just to get out of there. Please let me out. Oh, this is torture. I'm not well yet. I'm sweating and I'm nervous and shaking and I need a drink and so forth and so on, and I just wanted out of there. I didn't want anything else. So finally he said, Warren, he said, I'm going to give you one more opportunity. And he handed me my salary check as he had done on every other occasion. He handed me my expense check, and those are the two mistakes he made that day as far as I'm concerned. And he said, I think I'll transfer you out of this Cleveland territory. He said, maybe if you get away from all these people that you know, he said, and that you're associating with and get in another territory, he said, I think probably you might be all right. He said, I'm going to put you in the Youngstown territory. And he said, you report in there tomorrow morning. What he was really saying was that he wanted to get me away from those so-and-sos that were just bothering me and holding me down every night and pouring this stuff down my throat and getting me drunk so that I couldn't work, see? So he said, I want you to go to Youngstown, and he said, I want you to, we'll wipe out the past. He said, just do the kind of a job that you're capable of doing, and we'll forget the past. And he said, now here, let's do this job, Warren. So I said, fine, I'd have agreed to anything. Here I am with two checks in my pocket and the possibility of the price for a drink and what have you. So that, I mean, I just wanted out of there right about now. So we shook hands on it. But he just added one thing that he had never added before. And he said, Warren, he said, here's your opportunity. But he said, I just want to tell you, if you don't make it this time, please don't come back anymore. And I mean, that was pretty emphatic, and I've never been back either. And there I was. I knew he meant it, so I didn't go back. And there I was. I got into Youngstown, all right. I made that. But I made the Todd House, and there I lay for about a week or 10 days. I never even showed near the job, and of course then I had a reverse call home and send me the price of train fare out of Columbus and what have you. And there I was. There I was now, done, washed up. Overnight it seemed my whole house of cards had fallen in. The smart guy. The egotistical, arrogant individual who knew everything that nobody could tell anything to. There he was now, stripped of everything. And in getting around in the industry and trying to relocate and trying to find myself another position, I found that I was being treated courteously and kindly and politely, but nobody had anything for a man of my great ability. They could get along very well without me. And of course the reason was that once again, my reputation had preceded me, that they recognized in me something that they didn't want, the undependable, unreliable drunk. No matter what his brilliance, they don't need him. You know, we live in a land of make-believe. We know everything, we alcoholics. But we find out eventually that people can exist without us. But it took us a long while to find that out, and it took me a long while. It just seemed overnight that every single thing in life just disappeared as far as I was concerned. And I couldn't get this job. And I found that the prospects were nil. Here we were in a depression, and that people were begging for work. People would accept a job at any price. Good, reliable individuals that you could depend upon to be there every morning. The was nothing for the undependable, unreliable alcoholic. And being the cowardly individual that I was, it scared me to death. It scared me to the point of where I threw every responsibility which was mine in life to the winds and became a bum. It was easier that way. Isn't that horrible? I became a bum on Skid Row. And for the next 2 years in my life, from that early July of 1937 until July the 3rd, 1939, when I took what I hope is my last drink, is about as horrible a nightmare as any man has ever lived. It's indescribable to those who have never been through that shattering experience. Here was I, who had had every single opportunity in life with a fine wife, family, friends, associations. Here I was, bereft of every single thing in life that was worthwhile. Spiritually, physically, mentally, morally, and financially about as bankrupt as anybody could ever possibly hope to be. And as I saw the people walking up and down the streets, as I'd be on the row in different cities, moving here, there, and everywhere, sleeping where I could, in jails, out of jails, riding freight trains, drinking anything I could lay my hands on, a horrible nightmare in there. No wonder I don't remember my story well, but the scars are deep, and I hope they remain with me permanently. I hope that when I get cocky, as I do from time to time, that I can always open that closet door and have those skeletons jump out at me and make me realize how humble I should be and how grateful I should be for this great opportunity that is mine. How I should get rid of the resentment and the hate and the jealousy and the self-pity with which I'm afflicted from time to time and spend the rest of my days just being grateful for being able to come out of that misery and grief and heartache that was a part of my life for 20 years. And as I said, I'd watched the people going up and down the streets and the family units. And then I began to realize, for the first time in my life, what I had given up. I began to realize then, for the first time in my life, how important it was to be a part of things that were decent. How important it was to be a part of family life. How important it was to be a part of the community. How important it was to be something, to have your own self-respect and dignity, of which I had none whatsoever. And I thought about it constantly, staying drunk most of the time, drinking anything I could lay my hands on, trying to drink myself into oblivion, thinking of suicide many times, but too much of a coward to ever do anything about it, at least consciously. Maybe hoping that I wouldn't wake up, that this, and I've had people die beside me, sleeping in a field at night, drinking the same stuff that I was drinking, only they never woke up. And I hoped that that would happen to me from time to time. And there I was, out of everything, as I said, surrounded by an insurmountable wall, but here I am today. And you know, the more I thought of this thing, the more it became an obsession with me. I can't explain any of these things. The more it became an obsession with me to find the solution to my drinking problem. I somehow had figured out, and this must have been hard to do, that drinking was my trouble. And I somehow felt that if I could find the solution to that problem, everything would work itself out. Now imagine that, how fantastic with everything gone that I should think that way. It became an obsession with me to the point of where I thought about it constantly, to the point of where I discussed it with other people in the jungles and on Skid Row, to the point of where I thought about it in my own mind hour after hour after hour. I've cried about it in my loneliness. I've said, please, God, help me. Just one more chance. I'll make it this time. You know, I'd said those words hundreds upon hundreds of times in my life. I quit drinking more times than anybody else in the world. I'm sure of that. I had said those words many times. Every single time that I was in a jam of one kind or another, I turned to God. Please, God, get me out of this one and I'll never do it again. Knowing full well when I said the words that I wasn't going to change my way. That I was going right back. All I wanted was out of this trouble. And the minute that that trouble was resolved, I was the type of individual who took charge again and didn't need the help of God nor man until he got in the next jam. But inasmuch as I was in a jam frequently, I knew the words because I had said them many times. But somehow or other this time, they must have been sincere. And I'm sure they were. And I'm sure they are every single day that I live, because here I am. Here I am as a result of this great program of AA and Clarence Snyder, who sponsored me into the program. And this is another mysterious thing that I'll never know. I hadn't been home for ages. As a matter of fact, they didn't want me home. That was one reason why I never went. But here I am in a two-year drunk, at the tail end of a two-solid-year drunk, from early July of 1937 to late June of 1939. And I suddenly come home one day, battered and beaten, dirty and cruddy and, oh, sick physically, mentally, and every other way. And I'm sure everybody thought I was sick mentally. Nobody that I ever knew in the world outside of my wife ever thought that there was a possibility that I would ever get sober for 23 minutes, never mind 23 years. And as I walked up to the door in the street that I lived on in a nice neighborhood this afternoon with all the kids around, and I disgraced my children time after time. As I walked up to the door, my wife came to the door and she said, "You're not coming in." And I said, "I have to come in. I'm sick." And she said, "Go ahead." I said, "I need help. I want help." I said, "I want to quit drinking more than I want anything else in the world." And she said, "Where have I ever heard that story before?" Every time I was on a drunk was the last time. And I can remember so well my brother-in-law, who was such a good friend of mine, one of my brothers-in-law. He'd come down to visit me after I'd be getting off one, sitting there about 3 days sober and jittery and nervous and trying to read and so forth. And he'd visit with me and say, "How you feeling?" And I'd say, "Well, I'm afraid I'm going to make it." He said, "This the end?" I said, "This is it, Charlie. Now that's it. I mean, no more. I've had all of this grief that I want. I've had enough of this trouble." Always wondering how you stood on your job. Always wondering how much money I owed after this one and so forth and so on. Always tangled up in a lot of grief. And I said, "This positively is it. No more." He'd look at me, you know, and a cute little smile would come over his face, and he'd say, "You so-and-so." He said, "You're just resting up for the next one." And you know how true that was. You know, we had to get in shape for the next one. We couldn't keep drinking forever. I drank for 2 years, and I wasn't in shape to drink anymore. That's why I went home that day. But you know, previous to that, I'd rest up in between 10 days or 2 weeks and get a little food in my stomach and build myself up a little bit so I'd be in shape to go on another one. But this time, there was nothing left. I weighed 155 pounds, I think it was, when I came off my last run. A little hard to believe, but I've been eating regular in the meanwhile. And finally I said, "I need your help. I want to quit drinking more than anything else in the world." And finally she let me in, being the kindly person that she is. And we sat down, and I started repeating what I had said. And she said, "You know, by a strange coincidence, there was a man here yesterday. And when he told me his story, I thought he'd been following you around all your life. And he said that if and when I saw you, if you really wanted to quit drinking, he could help you. He belongs to some organization, and he says that he can help you." Now, the reason he was there wasn't to make a social call. He was there to collect a bill. But he collected me instead. The bill got paid eventually, but not right then. But how strange these things were. How strange it is. And so many cases of like this I've seen. And I've had people who drank on Skid Row with me, three people call me and have become members for many years in this great program of AA. How strange this program is. How wonderful it works. And you hate to talk about miracles because people think you're wrong just a little bit, you know. You hate to, even just amongst ourselves, you even hate to say, well, that's a miracle. But gee, what else can it be when you've seen the things that I've seen? When you've been privileged to be a part of this great program as long as I've been, and you have seen the things take place, unfold, you know it's for real. You know that you didn't dream it or that you didn't read it out of a book. And we made this call to Clarence Snyder, and he came over and unfolded the story of this program. And he wanted to put me in the hospital, and I would like to have gone. I needed it. I needed the mental hospital, principally. And he wanted to put me in, but it cost money, unfortunately, and I didn't have it. And I was afraid that that was going to disqualify me, because in the early days, that's the only way you were supposed to come in to AA. You were supposed to come in through the Akron City Hospital and have Doc Smith, one of the co-founders, talk to you and so forth and so on. But Clarence, being the type of individual that he is, made arrangements for me to get the indoctrination into this program at a member's home on the east side. And I shall never forget. Clarence brought me over the first night. He came over in the west side of town. I lived on the west side of Cleveland. This was on the way over in the extreme east. He came over. He had an automobile. As a matter of fact, he was an automobile salesman. And he took me over and he stopped at the agency where he worked the night that we went over. And he said, boy, you're nervous. He said, you need a drink. And boy, that was the understatement of the year, probably the century. But I said, no. He said, but you need one. I said, no. He said, are you sure? And I said, absolutely. And you know what? I was afraid to take that drink. I needed it and would have welcomed it. But you know, I was afraid to take that drink because I was afraid I would disqualify myself for the help that he had offered me. I wanted more than anything else in the world, back in 1939, in early July, I wanted more than anything else in the world to be sober, to find the solution to my drinking problem so that I need never go back into that misery and grief and heartache that I had known for so many years. And some 23 years and months later, I want more than I wanted then, every single day that I live, to be sober. I want it more today than I did then. And I can't forget my introduction to these people, and we were 10 or 11 strong at that time. I happened to be 12 or 13 in the first Cleveland group. And they have been sober anywhere from a few days up to 6 months, and Clarence Snyder, who will be sober 25 years next February, was sober a year and a half when he sponsored me into the program. I shall never forget their friendship and their help. I shall never forget the fact that they didn't care where I came from, what I had done, what my background of education, position in society, industry, or anything else might have been. That they weren't interested in anything but two things. First, are you an alcoholic? And second, are you willing to do anything we ask you to do about it? And having received an affirmative answer to that, and they meant anything without any qualifications whatsoever. They didn't soft soap, but they said, are you willing to do anything we ask you? And if you answered no to that when you were out, you didn't have a chance. You had to accept it in its entirety. You had to believe in it thoroughly. You had to accept it on faith, as they said. You had to accept it and not try to pull it apart and find out what made it tick. You had to believe in it thoroughly and want it above everything else in the world. And you know, in order to be successful in getting this job done of staying sober, the most important job that we have to do every single day that we live, we must want it every single day that we live above everything else in the world. It's the most important job that we have to do in life. Every single thing in life that's worthwhile is dependent upon how well we do this job of staying sober. It comes before everything. It takes precedence over every other thing we have to do in life. And you say, over my family and job and everything else, and I say, over everything. Why? It's as simple as ABC when you break it down. Why? What did we care about family? What did we care about jobs or responsibilities or anything else than when we were drinking? We were warned repeatedly by our wives, by our bosses, and by everyone else, unless you quit drinking, unless you behave yourself, unless you act like a man, this is the end. Next time you're done. Time after time after time, but every single time we went back and took that one more chance. What did we care about responsibilities? If we did, we wouldn't be in this position that we're in today. That's why I say it's the most important thing in the world, because if we can do the job of staying sober successfully every single day that we live, then we can accomplish the job that we have to do in life of putting each and every single responsibility which is ours in its rightful place. We can be a good father. We can be a good husband. We can be a good friend. We can be a good employee. We can be a good employer. We can be a good anything. But above everything else in the world as an alcoholic, in order to accomplish those things, we must first, every single day that we live, be sure that we stay sober. And you know, to each and every single person who comes into this program, as they told me in the beginning and unfolding this story to me, each and every single one of us that comes into this program has an ironclad guarantee that provided you accept this program in its entirety, provided every single day that you live, you want more than anything else in the world to be sober, and you're willing to do without compromise the things that this program recommends, you have a definite and absolute guarantee that regardless of what happens in your life, regardless of what situation you may be confronted with at any given time, you will never find it necessary to go back into the misery and grief and heartache of yesterday. A lot of people think that just because they're staying sober that they're doing the world a favor. And I think we all thought that we were accomplishing great things, particularly in the beginning. The kids should stay quiet and our wives shouldn't burn the toast and the boss shouldn't talk nasty to us and so forth and so on. Everything should go our way. Aren't we being nice boys and girls and staying sober? We're not getting ahead very fast. We resent that. We're not getting a new automobile like Joe Blow that's only been in 2 months more, less than we have and so forth and so on. And you know, this program doesn't guarantee anything. As far as material things are concerned, it wasn't designed or conceived to give us a better automobile or to bring back the wife that divorced us 10 years ago or to get us a better job or to make people recognize what great people we are. It wasn't designed to smooth the path of life for us, to remove the reverses and disappointments and temptations and failures that go to make up everyday life. Rather, it was conceived, as I see it, to build us as individuals strong enough in character, with faith and spiritual fortitude great enough that will enable us to be able to meet and to face and to roll with the punches of life and to be able to overcome the obstacles that life has to offer without flinching, without running away, without using it as an excuse to get back into the neck of that bottle. That's what this program was designed for. Staying sober, again, I repeat, is the biggest job that we have to do in life. It's a challenge to every single thing that's worthwhile within each and every single one of us. It isn't something that we can wish ourselves into, or hope ourselves into, or pray ourselves into, or that our Aunt Josie can do for us. This is the responsibility of the individual. But you know, the tools are made available in equal quantity to every single one of us. That if we accept it, as I said, in its entirety, wanting our sobriety every single day that we live and we use those tools, then we have no trouble whatsoever. It is that guarantee that we get in that this program cannot fail. It has not failed, it never shall fail for the individual who accepts it and does the things on that basis. Individuals fail from time to time. And the reason it can fail is because along the way we take on knowledge. We become honest with ourselves and are willing to admit our shortcomings and we try to correct them. We try to get rid of the treacherous and cancerous traits of character that have been so much a part of us for so many years. The arrogance, the pride, the hate, the jealousy, the self-pity. We try to replace those with traits of character that are good, with charity and love and understanding and tolerance with everyone with whom we come in contact. That's why we can never become smug or self-satisfied in this job. That's why, regardless of the period of time of sobriety that we might be able to enjoy, that we can never quit. We can never reach the point of where we feel that we've graduated or learned everything that there is to learn. Because this job is of such magnitude that we never finish learning and doing. And for an example, we've all had this experience. We have just beaten down a beautiful case of self-pity that we had because some plan of ours blew up in our face. Something that we'd wanted to happen our way. And it blew up and we were so disappointed that we developed such a case of self-pity. And then realizing that that wasn't good for it, we worked on it with the tools of this program and we eliminated it. And just about when we were ready to reach around here and pat ourselves on the back as we sometimes like to do, over here something happens that causes us to have a bad case of resentment. This job is never done. Once an alcoholic, always an alcoholic. Regardless of how long we are privileged to become a part of this great program of AA. And the next drink that we should be unfortunate enough to take will just be the continuation of the drunk that we left off when we were privileged to become a part of this program of AA. A lot of people have tried to disprove that theory. I have never seen yet, and I've seen them by the hundreds. I have never seen the individual yet whoever succeeded in going back and becoming a social drinker. The lifelong ambition of every single alcoholic that ever lived. To be able to drink socially. To be able to drink and have fun and let your hair down and relax after the problems and trials and troubles of the day. To drink and not insult the hostess and the host and get in bed and make a fool of yourself with your friends and your enemies and everything else. To be able to drink like your wife said, why don't you drink like Mr. Jones and get up and go about your business, you dirty louse in the morning instead of laying in bed? Why don't you go to work and not lose that job? You never see Mr. Jones doing that, do you? And each and every single time we tried that noble experiment, it was so that we could accomplish that goal of social drinking. We tried every means that we knew to accomplish that end. Just drinking wine, just drinking beer, just drinking at home, just drinking away from home. Just drinking whiskey with water, just drinking it with ginger ale, and so on and so forth. We tried every means at our command to accomplish that great goal of social drinking. But doesn't the fact that we're here prove that we fail? Doesn't it prove that we're all washed up and done as far as being a social drinker is concerned, and that the big job that we have to do in this program when we come in is not so much admit the fact that we're alcoholic. Anyone can admit that when he's at a low ebb. I mean, his job is gone, or it's in danger, his wife is mad with him, she's got a divorce writ in, he hasn't got any friends left, he owes money all over the place, and they're about to turn the lights and the gas off and everything else. And somebody comes along and says, I understand you're having a little problem with your drinking. What other answer can you give but yes? And then, when he said, would you like to do something about it? What is the obvious answer? You're like the guy in jail. You do anything to get out of the mess that you're in. That's easy. But the big job we have to do is not to admit so much, but once we're in this program, to accept the fact that we're alcoholics, to accept the fact that we'll be alcoholics until the day that we die, till they wheel us out feet first. Then we're done having to try to do this job successfully. And second, as we go along, we learn that and we accept that fact. And then as we go along, we begin to know and to accept the second great fact. And as important as the first, that every alcoholic must know in order to do the job of staying sober successfully. And that is this. That never, 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 under any circumstances, is a drink the solution to a single problem that we have. That's about as fundamental and elementary as one can get. But you know, we have to be reminded of that constantly, because we used every excuse in our past lives, every excuse, alibi, reason, real or imaginary, to get back into the neck of that bottle. That's why activity in this program is important. That's why it's important that we stay a part of the program, so that we're constantly reminded of our shortcomings and of the tremendous job that we have to do every day, so that we'll never become smug and self-satisfied and feel that we've attained perfection. But you know, as I said, when they told me in the beginning at this home on the east side of Cleveland, they unfolded this story, and I didn't understand too much what they were talking about. I liked their friendship. I liked their zeal. I liked their charity. I liked every single thing about them. I felt that I was home. Here were my friends, like I feel here. Here were my friends that wanted to help me. Here were people that understood me. And they told me a lot of things. But one man in particular, and I don't know his name, told me this one important fact that's been a part of my philosophy ever since I've been in. That provided you follow the principles and practices of this program, not only will you find the solution to your drinking problem, but to every single problem that you have in life. And how important is it for us to remember that quitting drinking is only the beginning of the tremendous job that we have to do. The elimination of the bad traits of character and replacing them with good traits. Isn't it important to remember that we can never become smug and self-satisfied no matter how long we've been privileged to stay sober? A lot of people ask me now, how come that you retain your great enthusiasm, that you're so active, that you do this, that you do that in this program after all these years? I should think you'd be coasting about now. And I've got a stock answer to that one. It's a good thing I am enthusiastic. It's a good thing I stay active in this program. It's a good thing I think this way. Because as long as I do, I know that I don't have to go back into the misery and grief and heartache of yesterday. I've lived on both sides of the track. I like so much what I've been privileged to find here that I never want to go back. And I have that ironclad guarantee that if I retain that enthusiasm and that activity in this program, that I need never go back. It's as simple as that. This is such a simple, down-to-earth, understandable program in every single respect. By the same token, we must remember, as I said, it requires work and effort on the part of the individual. And doesn't it make sense that we must work at it constantly? Certainly, take my own case in business, for example. I've worked in this line of business for a good many years. Being me, I think I know something about it. Probably more than I really do, too. And so, does it make sense? I've attained a certain position in the company that I work for that's a little better than average, let's say. Does it make sense now that I put my feet up on the desk and light up a big cigar and let the rest of the world go by? I made it. I've got it made. No, you don't do that in business or the professions. You now realize that having added responsibilities, that you now have to work harder than you ever did before, to retain that job and the standard of living that it gives you, because there's some ambitious individual behind you blowing down your neck, hoping you die or break your leg or have a heart attack or something so he can fall into it, eh? So that you can never become smug or self-satisfied. You now have to work harder than you've ever worked before. You have to keep up with the trend of the times. You have to know what goes on all the time. You have to know what your competitors are doing and so forth. And you can't do that with your feet up on the desk or laying in bed in the morning. And you can't stay sober without work and effort. And the more sobriety you get, the harder you have to work. Why? Because that sobriety that you've accumulated and the things that it gives you, certainly you don't want to lose. And if you don't want to lose it, you'll have to keep applying yourself every single day, doing just a little bit better job so that you'll guarantee yourself that you won't lose it. You know, this is a beautiful program. And the beautiful part of it is that the same opportunities are made available in equal quantity to every single one of us. That doesn't mean we're all going to have the same kind of a job or wear the same kind of clothes or have the same kind of automobiles or what have you. It does mean this, though, that if we're sincere in what we're doing and we apply the principles of this program to our daily life, it means this, that we can build for ourselves and retain permanently every single day that we live the two most important values that the individual can have, his or her own self-respect and dignity and the ability to live with one's conscience without reproach. Whether we get a new automobile or no matter what we have, if we're without those two values, we are bankrupt in every single respect. And the same opportunity is held out in each and every single one of us to attain those things in this great program, if we'll but apply those tools. If we'll but remember how insignificant and unimportant we are in this whole scheme of things. And that's pretty difficult for the alcoholic, the big shot, the guy that knew everything. Boy, me? Doesn't the fact that the world got along without us in business and the professions and everything else when we were missing prove to us anything? Doesn't the fact that everybody got along without us prove that we don't have too much importance, particularly when we're drinking? You know, when the alcoholic is tempted to say, gee, I'm not that unimportant. I'm an important part of my company, my business, blah, blah, blah. You know, we're an important part of it. We're the greatest. We're the greatest. You hear them all the time. Only the intelligentsia become drunk. You know, the greatest doctors, the greatest salesmen, the greatest butchers, the greatest everything. You hear them all the time bragging about how good they are. So, I mean, only the real intelligent people become alcoholics. That's all we think. You know, I think we can bring ourselves down to earth pretty quickly and make ourselves pretty humble and make ourselves conscious of how very small we are and how very badly we need the help of God as we understand them in our everyday life by asking ourselves just one simple question. If you were as smart as you thought you were, and didn't every single one of us think we were brilliant? If you had all the great ability you thought you possessed, and what ability. Didn't we tell them all about it in the bar, around the bars, about those big deals we pulled? Boy, we were great. If you had all those things, what are you doing here in the first place? It's as simple as that again. Isn't the fact that you're here an admission of failure, regardless of what your background of education, position in life, or society, or anything else might have been? Isn't the fact that you're here an admission that you were powerless over alcohol and that your life had become unmanageable? That you weren't able to get this job of living done successfully, regardless of what other assets you might have had? Certainly that should make every alcoholic humble enough to realize that all the help he'll ever need is his for the asking, from a God of his own choice, his own understanding. Asking in his own way, and it's been my observation and my own personal experience, that all the help that one ever needs is his for the asking, provided he is sincere and provided above everything else he's willing to do something to merit it. And doesn't that make sense that you can't say, please, God, keep me sober today and have everything happen my way? And we want that at times, and I'd love to have it personally, but it doesn't happen that way. Doesn't it make sense that we have to earn every single thing that's worthwhile in life? Doesn't it, if we want a better job, we have to prove to the company that we work for, that we have the capabilities, loyalty to the company, and so forth and so on, that will give us consideration? If we want a favor from some friend in life, don't we have to prove by the kind of person we are and our attitude towards that individual that we're worthy of the consideration that we ask? Then doesn't it make sense that the most important help that we alcoholics need every single day that we live, the help of God with our daily problem of living, we must do something to merit it? And the way that we can merit that help in a simple, easy way is by putting into effect as best we know how every single day that we live without compromise, making mistakes and plenty of them, and we make them every single day that we live, but doing the best we can and putting into effect the 12 steps of this program in our daily life. All the help that we'll ever need, we'll get everything that we need, provided we do it on that basis. I know. We may not get everything that we want, and how nice it would be, probably, and maybe it wouldn't be so nice. How nice it would be for me to be able to go in Monday and say, boss, today's the day you're going to do all those things. I'm resting. But we can't have it that way. But we're going to get every single thing that's good for us. And it gives us the ability to accept the things we cannot change and the courage to change the things that we can. You know, we have some tremendous responsibilities for the privilege which is ours, the greatest opportunity and the greatest privilege that has ever come into the life of the alcoholic is to have found this great program of AA that enabled us to sweep under the rug all the heartache and chaos of yesterday and build a life for ourselves that's so unbelievably worthwhile that it's indescribable. This is a tremendous opportunity, and for that we have some tremendous obligations and responsibilities. We have, above everything else, I feel, the obligation and responsibility of being a good example. Of being a good example in this program so that we can hold out the hand of hope to those who are yet to come and those who are new in the program, as someone so generously and unselfishly held it out for us one day. That's a tremendous responsibility. People are watching us all the time. People who knew us when. The people who didn't even know we drank are watching us. People are watching us, and amongst those people watching us is someone interested in a loved one of theirs, a wife or a husband, a sister, a brother, who knew us when, who saw us staggering up the street and all at once we come home sober one night and the whole neighborhood is on the telephone. Guess what? Chisholm came home sober tonight. You know? And then it happens the next night and the next night, next night, and it ceases to be a wonder. But amongst that crowd is somebody who hopes it'll work so that there'll be some semblance of hope for the loved one in whom they're interested. I've had this work out that way. As I said, I have had people who drank on Skid Row with me call me after they saw what happened to me. That is not a fairy story. We have a tremendous obligation as far as good example is concerned. If we do this job well, if we take advantage of this tremendous opportunity, then we can give someone else his or her rightful chance in life, maybe. If we do it poorly, then we may deprive someone of his or her rightful opportunity. And then we have the responsibility and obligation of giving of ourselves and time and efforts and talents to help other people, afflicted as we are. We have the obligation to become tolerant and charitable and understanding with everyone with whom we come in contact and love it. And that's a big job. That's why this job is never done. It's such a tremendous job. I like everybody, only there's a lot of people I like a lot better than others, and I think we're all in the same book. It's a tough job to love. It's a tough job to forgive people for the things they're doing to us or have done to us and so forth. But those are some of the things that we have to do in life. And then we have this responsibility of giving them ourselves to help someone else or someone helps us. Who else can understand the alcoholic? Who else can make him feel that he's amongst friends? Who else can show him how to get this job done successfully as a result of our own experience? We have a tremendous obligation. We have a tremendous responsibility in that respect. Because it doesn't make sense, does it? That again, we can say, please God, keep me sober today and make everything go my way and refuse the call for help from our fellow man. Because every single phase and part of this great program of AA is predicated upon the two great commandments of the love of God and the love of our fellow man. Every single thing that we do, every thought of ours, if we're doing it sincerely, is based upon those two commandments. And one as important as the other. That's why we must give of ourselves. But while the responsibility is tremendous and the obligation is great, there, what is more soul-satisfying than to know that you have been privileged to take part in the rehabilitation of someone else? To know that you have been able to help somebody and watch that individual grow and develop and take his or her rightful place in society and in industry. It's the thrill of a lifetime. To watch the growth and development of love and respect and confidence in that family unit. Watch the kids come out from under the bed, no longer afraid of the old man when he comes home. It's the greatest feeling in the world. But the beautiful part of it is that we don't merely help those people so much as we help ourselves every single time that we do that. Because every single time that we give of ourselves to help others afflicted as we are, we build for ourselves fortification and insurance against the day when we may have to draw on every single bit of reserve that we build up to get us by some particularly rough situation. Into the life of each and every single one of us someday will come tragedy in one form or another. And when tragedy hits the alcoholic, he or she must be strong. And this is how we make ourselves strong, with a dependence upon our God and with our willingness to help our fellow man. Building fortification and insurance that's impregnable, building it every single day that we live. With activity in this great program of AA. And then we have in this program the opportunity of getting together, of discussing with each other our problems and the philosophy of this program. Here is the schoolroom where we learn each and every single time that we go. If we go seeking to learn, not wondering who's going to speak tonight or how long does this guy talk and so forth, but if we go seeking to learn just a little bit more about how to do the most important job in our lives, the job of staying sober just a little bit better. Here is where we take on that knowledge, if we come to learn. Every single phase and part of this great program of AA is important. Each and every single part of it. Becoming humble before God and our fellow man and grateful for this tremendous opportunity that has come into our lives. The willingness to lead a life as best we can according to the steps of this great program of AA. Being willing to be that good example so that we can hold out the hand of hope to others, and being willing to give of ourselves at every opportunity so we can give someone else the same chance in life that our sponsors gave us. And the willingness to learn every single time that we can get together just a little bit more how to do this, the most important job in our lives, just a little bit better. Each and every single phase and part of this program is one part unbreakably linked with the other. If we have that undying ambition every single day that we live to be sober, because it'll give us every single thing in life that's worthwhile, we'll do the things that this program recommends. And when we do the things that this program recommends, it gets me back to that room in East Cleveland many years ago where this individual told me that provided you follow the principles and practices of this program of AA, Not only will you find the solution to your drinking problem, but the means whereby you can meet and face and overcome every single problem that you have in life without flinching, without finding it necessary to go back to where you were before you were privileged to become a part of this great program of AA.